Hey everybody, welcome to episode 7 of season 5 of Victims of Fun. This is El Stevo. How you all doing this week? It is a very, very rainy day in Florida. It's been raining for a couple days. It's going to rain for another week. There's a tropical storm in the Gulf. And the power's been going on and off. There's been lightning, internet's been going down, cable's been going down, and it's just rain and gray and I hope it's but it's nice weather wherever you are, because right now it sucks here in Florida. And I'm recording from the home studio instead of on location, which is what I usually do. So what are you going to do, you know? And remember, Victims of Fun is recorded exclusively on Anchor FM. We're using a blue microphone, a blue Snowball Ice, best microphone on the planet. Victims of Fun is stored on a Seagate SSD external hard drive. And the whole thing is put together on an Apple MacBook Air M1. And I like to give those machines and whatnot a shout out, because they all work very well together. I'm hoping eventually you get a mixing board and a MIDI keyboard thingamajig and add to it. I could get a baffle for the microphone too. I want to get more of a more professional setup. And remember, Victims of Fun is available on Spotify, Anchor FM, Pandora, iHeartRadio, anywhere where there's a good podcast, you'll find Victims of Fun. And you can mail me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, And you just have to search for Victims of Fun. You'll see the logo. It's with the blue microphone. It says Victims of Fun on it. And there you go. Eventually, we're going to have our own YouTube channel, Twitch stream, and eventually a website. Got to get more viewers. I got to get more listeners. Because remember, you can hit the sponsor button, too, on Spotify. You can send me some money, because I need it. You don't. And I got to start marketing better, because the viewership numbers are pretty low. And I need to be... I need to have at least a couple hundred listeners a show. Right now, I don't. So, I got to... I'm probably going to use that. You ever been on website Fiverr? Like, where people sell their services? There's a lot of people who do promotions and stuff for... like OnlyFans, like I'd ever do that. Or like podcasts or ebooks and stuff. And you pay them, you know, it was called Fiverr because in the original version of Fiverr, nothing was more than $5. But then they realized, you know, not many people are going to want to only charge $5 to do like 2 hours worth of promotion time. But it's still cheaper than, you know, hiring a marketing company, which would be thousands of dollars. And I think I'm going to set something like that up tonight for the podcast. I got to get some more viewers and everything. So, there you go. Now, in the past, I've talked about my friend Haley Dietrich. You should go check out her YouTube channel, her Instagram. She's really cool. She's a good friend. Beautiful girl. Trying to get into modeling, acting, stuff like that. And she's big into K-pop. You know, BTS and everything else, and she's really, really big into it, and she's not just a fan. I mean, she's very knowledgeable about the music itself, and, you know, we've had, her and I have talked about before, and you know, I guess, you know, being my age, you know, stuff like that's a bit hard to, I don't want to say become a fan of, but hard to get my head around. Now, living in Japan for a while, you know, you got J-pop and everything, and it was everywhere. And if you watch any anime, you're exposed to J-pop, because that's pretty much the opening song of any good anime, is a high-energy J-pop song. So I want to give K-pop and BTS a try, because I've read that BTS's lyrics and their songs are actually quite positive. They're, you know, about positivity and love and self-love and confidence and stuff like that. It's not like what you would see a lot of boy bands in America, or even a lot of like hip-hop rap or whatever, where it's misogynistic and just, you know, it's not very positive. It's where supposedly people are saying that BTS is not like that. They're actually a positive force with their lyrics and their songs and everything. So figure I'm gonna fire up some BTS and we're gonna listen together and see what this is like. So this apparently is a song called Butter, which came out on May 20th, and this is BTS. This is the lyrics from the, not lyrics, but this is the, we're going to be listening to the song off the YouTube channel, and I'm trying to see, I'm looking at the official webpage, and, oh man, yeah, I mean, you got to see, this thing's got, okay, so it's been out since May 20th, and it's got 360 million views. Okay, it's been out since May 20th, and this music video has 360 million freaking views. Okay, it's got 17 million likes and 245,000 dislikes, which is, I guess, you know, there's always going to be somebody disliking something. I've seen YouTube videos, you know, puppy rescued from fire comes back to life and makes family's life very, very joyful, and people are downvoting it, because there's a lot of bitter, toxic people out there. So let's fire up this song. We're going to listen together. Now, this isn't really set up to do simultaneous streaming, so basically, the song is going to be playing out of the speakers on my MacBook into the microphone while I'm listening at the same time. So hopefully this doesn't cause some sort of temporal feedback where you know, the whole system explodes. And we're going to listen to music, and I'm going to give my opinions as we're listening to it as far as, you know, what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. So here we go. This is Butter from BTS, the official music video from Hybe Labels, H-Y-B-E Labels. This is the name of the YouTube channel. So here we go. Okay, this is pretty good so far. Just so you know, this video is in black and white. Oh, now it's in color. They're really good dancers, so I gotta give them that. This is actually pretty good. Okay, that's a very fashionable outfit this one guy has on. It's like white with the aviator glasses, and this guy's got orange on. This guy's got like pink streaks in his hair. It always amazes me the choreography, how they all move in unison. This guy's got blue hair. Okay, they're dancing around like a bunch of maniacs. This is actually really good. Okay, this is a really good-looking video. I gotta say, this is really... This you can dance to this. I would not turn this off on the radio if I was driving down the street. Okay, That was really good. Okay, that was really... I don't want to say I'm surprised, because Haley has very good taste when it comes to this sort of thing, but that was a really good song. That you could understand. I mean, they're singing in English, number one. But the lyrics were pretty catchy. I mean, smooth like butter. That's pretty good. I can't do the video justice describing it, but the cinematography, the lighting, the outfits are off the rails. The look is very good. And the dancing is incredibly good. And this is a very good... It's a very well-written song. It's the structure on it is incredible. As far as like how the beats flow and when it drops and picks back up again, everything is perfectly spaced and perfectly timed. And you can tell a lot of production work went into this as far as the structure of the song lyrically and how it's actually produced. It's top-notch. It's not... Yeah, you know, it's definitely not American, and you know, American boy band stuff like this focuses more on the image than the music, but this was an equal thing. You can see how people who would, how can I phrase this? Okay, so, when you have something like this where you have a boy band, in America... Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and everything. Nobody ever said that they were very good musically, lyrically. Nobody ever said that. Their whole thing was based on their image and how they looked and how they performed and the image that was presented of them. And that was it. Nobody ever said, you know, this is a well-written song, this is a very good structured song, the production values... It was all about the choreography, the concerts, and the image. You know, they never sang live. None of them ever did. This is a very good-looking video. They're very good-looking individuals. So I can see where people would latch on to BTS because of how they look. Like, the image. But I can also see... how people who appreciate music would latch on to the production side of it, because, damn, the lyrics are perfectly structured. There's no wasted space. A lot of songs have... It's the theory and concept of wasted space in writing and poetry and in songwriting is where you have too many words in the structure of your song. And it's wasted because it breaks away from the flow of the song. And it's like you're putting words in here because you just want to fill it up. And it's wasted space because this is space where the music should be playing, but you're over, you know, you're overlapping what should be a musical section, whether it's a second or 2 or 3 seconds, with lyrics that really shouldn't be there because it interrupts the flow of the song. This isn't that. This song, Butter, by BTS, the lyrics fit perfectly, almost like a Jenga tower that doesn't collapse. Each piece is supporting the piece above it and the piece below, lyrically. And it creates almost like the keel of a boat, which is supposed to be the strongest part of the whole structure. That's what lyrics are, is the keel of the song. It is supposed to be the strongest part of the entire song. And let me tell you, they're the keel on this song. The lyrics are perfectly positioned. They're perfectly written. There's no wasted space. It fits perfectly. The music that's built around the keel, around the lyrics, is fantastic. There's no missed drop opportunities. There's no overbeat. There's no extra notes anywhere where there shouldn't be. Whoever the producer on this was, and it's probably a Korean name I can't pronounce, and I'm sure people who who follow this know exactly who it is. The production value on this, whoever did the producing on this and the editing and structured it, has to be a genius of, like, mad scientist level, because the music fits perfectly. Everything in this song, and this is the only song I've listened to so far, so hopefully I'm going to listen to more on my own time and come up with a more intensive and comprehensive type of review. This is just something we're doing right now. But this song, the way it starts and ends and all the notes in the middle, and the way the beat is flowing, the way the notes are in, how everything is wrapped around each other is nearly perfect. It's pretty much as perfect as you can get. I don't find any flaw with it whatsoever, and I've been in this business a long time. This song was perfectly crafted. This is something like Gordon Ramsay making a beef Wellington. There is literally nothing wrong with this unless you are vegan. And unless you have some sort of bullshit racial thing against Koreans or Asians, or you just have some sort of stupid, you know, Reddit tier hatred of anything that's foreign, as far as like not American, there's no reason that you can't enjoy this, because this song is perfectly built. And this is something that I would blast driving down the road in my car. Absolutely. If I still had my convertible, I would blast this as I was cruising down a boardwalk in Daytona Beach or back in New Jersey, and I would feel, and I'm 53 years old, and I would feel no shame at listening to this, because this is very catchy. It was very bouncy. There's no sense of like anger or misogyny or anything else in it like an American production would have. This song was literally just, the words are escaping me, but it's literally something that if you're in a bad mood, you put it on, you blast it, you're maybe not cured, but you are pretty damn close to it. This was very, very, very impressive. And what I'm going to do until the next podcast is I'm going to listen to more of their music. I'm going to write up a bigger comprehensive review. And I'm going to go into it more, because this was good. This was very, and I don't want to say I'm surprised, because the snippets I've heard before of it, just talking to Haley or just listening to it, you know, in the background or on the news or whatever, I was always, you know, this is pretty good. But now that I've actually sat down and listened to it, and I'm blown away by it. It's actually quite good. And, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, and that sometimes people who appear to be wonderfully nice turn out to be assholes, and sometimes the biggest scumbags are the ones with the biggest hearts. I can safely say that looking at these guys that are in this band, they all look like they're pretty cool. Like, the impression you get is they're very approachable, very nice. You know, and unless I'm wrong, they just seem like they'd be very friendly type of really cool people. Like, a lot of fun. And that's something that's missing in music these days is, you know, music, nobody knows the origins of music. Nobody knows, you know, nobody knows when the first caveman picked up a rock and started pounding it on the ground and banged it in rhythm. Nobody knows. You know, it's somewhere. But music was supposed to be something, at least when it evolved into the form it is now, whether it was in the Roman Empire, ancient Egypt, Mesopotamia, Babylon, Middle Ages, the Renaissance, you know, the era of Mozart. Music was originally supposed to be something that lifted your soul. Something that made you feel good. Something that took you away from where you were and put you in a different moment and touched you. That was the original idea of music. And over the years, recently, you know, since the end of grunge, really, everything anymore is hip hop and R&B and rap, and most of it, music today, doesn't take you anywhere. There's no emotion. There's no nothing. It's like, it's almost like heroin. It gives you an instant high, but then when you come down from it, you're dead. It's empty. Empty calories, like sugar, like pixie sticks. It tastes good while you have it, but then, you know, an hour later, you're like, what? So music originally, when you sat in the National Theater and you heard Don Giovanni for the first time, people were crying because it just touched their souls so much. And, you know, opera or great classical music or, you know, things like or Christian choirs or Orthodox Christian chanting or, you know, things like that. They're supposed to move your soul. They're supposed to... There's a reason why music is so integral to religion around the world, because it's supposed to lift you up towards God or whatever God you believe in, no matter what you call him. And a lot of modern music now is just, it's empty. It has no soul. It doesn't lift you up. And yeah, there are exceptions. There's artists still making music like that, but honestly, there's hardly any of that anymore. At all, for any reason. And it's terrible. So, to hear something like this that, you know, accomplishes something that, you know, music doesn't do anymore. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel happy. You know, you didn't see me because obviously I don't simulcast this on Twitch or anything, but I was bouncing along with the music here in my chair. I'm just bouncing along, waving my arms like, yeah, okay, this is smooth like butter, man. You know, that, and if a band or a singer or a song can give you that feeling, I'm happy, then that's great. I mean, it's wonderful. I imagine at these concerts, you probably have a whole age range of people. You probably have older people, younger people, people were there with their kids and everything. It seems like something everybody could get into. Again, not knowing anything about it, but this is just the impression I get. And it was quite good. I liked it a lot. And I'm going to do some more listening to their stuff and have a future episode, maybe the next one or whatever, where I'm going to really dive into it more, because this intrigues me. I like this. So anyway, it's time for a commercial, because I got to pay the bill somehow, because you people aren't sending me money. So why don't you go on to Spotify or wherever and click the support thing and throw me some money, and then I can, yeah, I can afford better equipment. All right. Okay, we'll be right back. Go to the bathroom and get yourself some coffee. Be right back. And welcome back to a thunderstorm ravaged victims of fun. That's really thundering and lightning bad out there. I had to actually wait between recording part two because the lightning and everything. I didn't want my podcasting stuff to get hit by lightning and blow up, considering none of you are sending me any money. And if you want to send me money, you can hit the support button where you listen to Victims of Fun, whether it's on Spotify, Anchor, Pandora, or iHeart, and send me some money. And you can also mail me. You can email me at victimsoffun. That's victimsoffun@mail.com. You can send me your love, send me your hate, send me some ideas. I'll talk about them. Send me your feedback on the BTS stuff I just did, because I know they have a very big fan base. They're very opinionated about things and like to hear some input. So there you go. You should definitely mail me, and definitely click the support button. You know, and my financial goal is $500 a month, because I need to pay for this equipment and recording, and it's It's expensive to do his podcast, and people don't realize how expensive it is. But you know, what are you gonna do? You know, I still love doing it. I'd do it if I made no money, and I don't make any money, and I still do it. You know, 5 seasons, God knows how many episodes. there you go. So I was, you know, some of you may know I'm into anime and I'm into Godzilla. You know, I've been watching anime since I was a little kid. Like, I remember coming home from school in like 6th grade, running home so I could watch Battle of the Planets, which in Japan is Gatchaman. Or Star Blazers, which in Japan is Space Battleship or Space Cruiser Yamato. And I would run home to watch every episode. And you know, I always had to watch Godzilla movies. And growing up, you had the giant robot shows would be like Ultraman and Johnny Sacco and Space Giants. I think it was called Space Giants. It's was it Space Giants? It was the one that had 3 giant robots. You had Goldar, Silvar, and then their kid. Oh, but my favorite of all time, of all those type of movies, is Spectreman. The Spectreman doesn't even get a lot of love in Japan, but Spectreman was kind of like an Ultraman ripoff. And Spectreman always fought monsters that were based on pollution, because back in the 70s, Japan had a big pollution problem, which is how you ended up with a lot of environmental kaiju films, especially Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, or as it's called in Japan, Godzilla versus Hedorah, which was all about pollution. Hedorah is a monster that basically was from pollution. So Spectreman was an entire series where Spectreman was a robot, like not a robot, but he was a robotic hero type thing, like Ultraman. You know, he would assume human form and work for this organization that combated aliens and stuff, and whenever a giant monster appeared, he'd turn into Spectreman and go kick that monster's ass. And the villains of the story were two ape men. And they were outcasts from a very, very peaceful, pacifistic planet. And the one ape guy was named Dr. Gory, and he had blonde hair. Yeah, don't ask. He had blonde hair, okay? It was a guy in a ape mask, and he had a blonde wig. And his assistant was this stupid silverback gorilla guy named Karis. And I swear to God, Karis sounded just like the actor that played Colonel Ty in the reimagining of Battlestar Galactica. Michael Hogan, I think his name was. Sounded just like him. But this is from the 70s, and that guy was probably, you know, I think I'm older than him. So, but anyway. And Karis was a total dumbass. I mean, he was incompetent. But Dr. Gory was a very, very genius, and he was very loyal to Karis, even though Karis always screwed everything up, because Karis is the one that broke him out of the prison and enabled him to escape. So he had like some sort of like thing where, oh, I always got to save Karis because he saved me. So anyway, Dr. Gory sees the planet Earth and sees all the pollution and is like, man, this place sucks. These humans are polluting everything, so I'm going to take over the Earth and turn it into an environmental paradise. And how's he intend to do it? By sending giant monsters to destroy everything, thereby creating more pollution. Yeah, anyway, his methods weren't exactly great. But anyway, I loved Spectreman. Because Dr. Gory always had the most insane monster designs. I mean, they really went all out on this show, because the monster designs on this were just some of the goofiest things. There was one monster that was a combination of a mole and a catfish. The upper half was a mole with big claws and everything, but the lower part of his body coming out to his tail was the head of a catfish. I don't know where that came from. So, I want you to picture a mole standing upright, with giant claws, and then somewhere around his waist, he turns into the head of a catfish. And that's like his lower half that's pointing out the back. So whether you're in front of him or you're behind him, he's going to get you. I don't know if this monster, when he poops, if it's coming out of the catfish's mouth or how that works. Or I mean, I don't know. But anyway, so there was another monster on this show. His name was Gilligan, like from Gilligan's Island. And he was like, he had one eye and like sabers for his claw. I don't know. It's just... And what I loved was, in the English dub, Karras was always making these really stupid remarks under his breath that Dr. Gorry either never heard or just ignored. And Dr. Gorry would send Karras down to Earth from the spaceship to do some intelligence gathering. So Karras would go down, and he'd be wearing giant sunglasses and a hat and a scarf around his head that made him look like an old lady at an Atlantic City casino. And nobody ever questioned that there's this giant gorilla. Okay, but Karras would get caught up in what was going on around him. And he would do his surveillance, but then he'd go get some ice cream, or he'd go to the movies, or he ended up playing in the park with some children, and he got in on a baseball game, and he's supposed to be scouting these people out to, like, destroy the Earth, and he just gets caught up in Earth culture. And Dr. Gorry always yells at him when he gets back to the spaceship, and Karras, he'd be like, oh, Karras, what did you learn on Earth? And Karras like, well, I learned how when you throw into a double play on a baseball field. And Dr. Gorry's like, what does that have to do with anything? He said, well, you asked me what I learned. And it was kind of like, ugh. Anyway. Spectre Man was always my favorite. And he had quite literally the greatest opening theme song in the history of, like, these type of shows. And here, I'm going to play it for you. So check this out. I mean, this thing rocks, man. I mean, this rocks. I mean, you gotta listen to this. It's very jazz influenced. Power from space. There we go. He'll save the human race. Yet they'll never know the face of Spectre Man. I mean, the bass line in this is incredible. I mean, if you listen to the bass in the background, this guy is shredding it, man. He's like really shredding it, like big time. The interesting thing is, growing up as a kid, you know, what do I know about anything? And I find out years later that the Spectre Man theme song is not an original song. It is taken from an actual English song by a very good band called the Mystic Moods Orchestra. And they have a song called The First Day of Forever. And the song is very good. But it's Spectre Man. It's the music. So Spectre Man, the TV show, took the theme of The First Day of Forever and just ripped the lyrics out, re-recorded it, and made it into the Spectre Man song. Now, I don't know if they got permission from the Mystic Moods band or whatever, but all the digging I've done online shows that, you know, there was never any litigation or lawsuits behind it. And somebody, I remember reading somewhere, I think it was on Reddit, where somebody brought this point up in one of their, in one of the subreddits that has to do with Japanese giant robot shows and stuff, that, you know, whatever happened with, you know, what was the deal with this? And I remember somebody writing that the band, the Mystic Moods band, actually embraced it and would show a big picture of Spectre Man or scenes from the show when they would play the thing live. Now, I don't know if the Mystic Moods Orchestra is still around or not, but I'm going to play the song. Now, you just heard Spectreman. Now, this is the song that was first. It's called The First Day of Forever. Same guitar riff. And there's Spectreman right there. And this is the Mystic Moods Orchestra. I don't know if this is their YouTube channel or not. But this is actually a very good song. This is a very good, trippy, psychedelic song. I mean, that's incredible. The song is fantastic, and you can find the music on YouTube. And a side note to this is that for some reason that nobody's ever been able to explain, Spectreman is huge. And when I say huge, I mean huge in Brazil and Portugal, in the Portuguese-speaking nations. They're huge. I don't know why. Nobody's ever been able to explain how this happened. That it became extremely popular in, like, Portugal, Brazil, and the former Portuguese Empire. It just was one of those things that just happened. And there's bands in Brazil that perform the Spectreman song live because the show is so popular that really you can't be a cover band in Brazil without playing this song. Like, here's a recording from some club in Brazil where they do the song. This is from the Espacho Rock Bar. This is a pretty good cover. Cut off so I don't get any copyright violations, but one of the things I have to point out is you gotta remember, this is coming from the early 70s, before things were more politically sensitive, but when Spectreman needed to change his form from human to Spectreman, he raised his right arm up to the sky with his palm out and said, you know, turn me into Spectreman. Well, you know, that's kind of almost looks a lot like the Nazi fascist Italy salute. And, I mean, when you did the Nazi salute, when you did the whole, like, Heil Hitler thing, your arm is kind of held, not at a full 90 degrees, but, like, kind of like a, I don't even say 45, but it's not all the way up in the air. It's kind of, you hold it out in front of you, and then you lift it up a little bit, and that was the Nazi salute. The Italian fascist salute was elbows to your chest, and you lift your right arm up, and, like, palm out. The Spectreman salute is palm open, facing down, arm not quite vertical, but more at like a 70 degree angle. And, you know, for people who don't know any better, I mean like snowflakes and stuff, who see racism and white supremacy and Nazism and everything, they would look at it and go, my God, they're all doing the Nazi salute. And it's not. But what's funny is when you go on YouTube and you look at any of these channels where it's a band, a cover band from Brazil or whatever, doing the Spectre Man song, everybody in the crowd has their arms up, you know, during the song. And if you turn the music down, you're like, oh my God, this is like a Nazi rally. But it's not, because, you know, the angle is completely wrong. People like to see hatred and everything, even when it's not there, but it's hysterical. But I remember growing up, I would come running home to watch Spectre Man and Space Giants and Battle of the Planets and Star Blazers and Johnny Sacco, and you know, it was a good time. And they don't really make anything like that anymore. I mean, and back then, everybody was people in rubber suits. It was real people. There was no CGI in any of these TV shows, or even the old Godzilla movies. It's all men in suits and stuff. And, you know, everything's CGI now. And while I love the new Godzilla movies, it's all CGI. Shin Gojira, which is the latest Godzilla movie from Japan that won 10 of their Academy Awards, including Best Picture, has never happened before with a kaiju film, was motion capture. The guy was wearing the outfit, kind of like how Andy Serkis did Gollum, and then they would just CGI over him, and that's how Shin Gojira looked. But the I guess that's how they do things anymore. But I tell you, if I was in the film industry and I had any sort of pull, like if I was a Spielberg or a Tarantino or a Peter Jackson or somebody who could get things done, I would tell a studio, listen, you want me to direct this film? I'll direct this film. No problem. Even if I know the film sucks. But you got to give me $30 million to film a giant monster movie with no CGI and men in rubber suits. That's my condition. $30 million budget. I would do it in a heartbeat. I would do their crappy movie the best of my ability, and I'd take that $30 million budget and I'd make an old school, no CGI at all for anything, man in a rubber suit monster thing. I'd build the models, I'd build the suits, and I would shoot it in the... I might even shoot it on film and use post-processing to make it look like it was filmed in the 70s. You know, put the... kind of like how Tarantino did with some... with like parts of Kill Bill. Because I think it would look cool. That would be like the Showa era from Godzilla. But anyway, the reason I'm mentioning all this is there's been a Godzilla animated show on Netflix called Godzilla Singular Point. And the season just ended. It was 13 episodes. And it... you know, they're branching Godzilla out in anime now, because I guess it's cheaper to make an anime than, like, throw $30 million at a movie that may or may not make it back, where an anime could be made for, like, $1 million, and, you know, Netflix and everybody downloading it and watching it, they'll make their money back in, like, a week. But the first Godzilla anime was the Godzilla Planet Trilogy. Where it took place on Earth, but on Earth 20,000 years in the future. And it was three parts, three movies, three two-hour shows. And it was a very, very artistic, very, very philosophical trilogy. A lot of people didn't like it because they're used to Godzilla and monsters fighting. And the trilogy was nothing like that. It was more philosophical. It had a lot more to do with religion and man's place in the universe, and Godzilla just happened to be in the film. The Netflix one was called Godzilla Singular Point. And if you ever... Put it this way. If you were confused by Pink Floyd The Wall, or you're still trying to figure out the ending of 2001 A Space Odyssey, try to wrap your brain around Godzilla Singular Point, because your brain will literally fry. Seriously. Your head will explode. I just finished watching the last episode, and I still don't know what happened. And I watched all 13 episodes, and I watched some of the episodes more than once, because I was trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And I couldn't figure it out. It had something to do with something called the singular point and the archetype and the catastrophe. And it had to do with the future and getting information in the future to answer a question in the past that hadn't been asked yet. And it was just convoluted. And just, it was kind of like if you gave David Lynch a bunch of LSD... And said, okay, write a 13-part Godzilla series, 25 minutes each. And here's all the cocaine and LSD you can want. And here's some peyote. So, there you go. Basically, this is what he would have pumped out. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. The animation in it was spectacular. The music was phenomenal. The designs of some of the... of pretty much all the monsters was spot on. And what I did like is they used the old Showa era classic Godzilla monster sounds. Like if you see the new Godzilla American movies like King of the Monsters and stuff, those aren't the original roars and stuff of Godzilla and Rodan, Mothra, and Ghidorah. They're not. They're kind of changed a little bit. The ones they use in Singular Point, literally they took the tracks from the 70 movies and pulled the sounds out for the monsters and put them in this one. But the story is just, I don't know what kind of drugs these people were on, but the science around it, I mean, what's his name, Neil deGrasse, his head would explode trying to figure this out. I think Carl Sagan would even give up on this because... the technobabble and the science in it just absolutely made no sense whatsoever at all. And I was very... I still think the animated trilogy was better, but, you know, what do I know? I got ripped apart on Reddit for saying I enjoyed the trilogy better, because apparently on Reddit, they think Singular Point is better, and the people that say the trilogy is better get, like, yelled at. So, I don't know what to tell you. Everybody's allowed to have their own opinion. Just apparently some people's opinions are worth more than others. Whatever. You can kiss my Godzilla ass. So, what you should do is you should go on YouTube, and the Spectreman episodes are all on there. I think they're public domain now. So, anybody, you can go on YouTube and watch them. And just start with episode one and go. I think there's like 27 episodes. And I don't think they've ever been released on Blu-ray. And when I was in Japan, you could never find any Spectreman stuff. It's all Ultraman and stuff like that, and Godzilla and anime and Sailor Moon and Cowboy Bebop and Captain Havok and all that stuff. But, you know, good luck finding Spectreman stuff. You can't. And it's a shame because Spectreman, you know, if I had that $30 million from the studio, I would make Spectreman, the movie. I would try to reproduce it as much as I possibly could, update it a little bit to the modern day, but I would use the same song. I wouldn't even get the song re-recorded by anybody. See, I don't like when they do that. I don't like when you have a song from an original movie from like 20, 40 years ago, then they update it because they always make it a hip-hop song. I'm like, you know, people are sick of that shit. So, I would use the same Spectreman opening song. The man in suits, the models, the whole thing. I would try to see if the old voice actors for Dr. Gorian Karras were still alive that did the American dub, and if they weren't, I would try to get people that sounded just like them because I would want everything the same. I would just update it a bit. That's the movie I would make. And there you go. But, yeah, we'll see. Maybe you should start becoming a supporter so I can raise $30 million to make this film. So, there you go. Alright, so that's all the time we got for this week for Victims of Fun. Hopefully you were interested in Godzilla and BTS. If not, sorry, you know, but I talk about whatever. Remember, you can follow Victims of Fun on Anchor, Spotify, iHeart, and Pandora. And you can hit that support button to send me some money. Remember, you can mail me at victimsoffun@mail.com. I will respond to each and every email I get. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just do a search for Victims of Fun and you'll see the logo, and there you go. So I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I hope you all have a good, safe, healthy week, and hopefully... Well, I can't say hopefully it'll stop raining because I've seen the weather forecast and it's going to rain for another week. But if you're in Florida and you're on the Gulf Coast, stay safe. Especially all you guys that are living out in the marinas and the mooring fields, stay safe. And thank you to all the first responders and the veterans and the police. Got your back. Don't worry about it. And remember, everybody, love each other. All right. See you next time. Bye-bye.